going to Salem to shout out not just to the city officials but to the government officials of this state. And so we're ending our next Right to Survive radio show. And if you want to know more about this, give us shelter walk to Salem. Right to Survive is having a meeting tomorrow from 5 to 7 at
the joint offices, off of 81st
yeah 13
Avenue
1435 Northeast 81st Avenue. And you can learn more about this walk and why it's taking place, and we'll be also discussing Pitch a Tent.
And Peter, can you give the website for the walk one more time?
So the website is thegiveusshelter.com. Don't forget thegiveusshelter.com. And I'd like to give a big shout out to Right to Survive for this show and for giving us a chance to talk about this.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
And thank you, Cable, for having Right to Survive. And Pledge, people, Pledge, so you can hear more reality stories and events like this. Thank you.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunchbox, located in downtown Portland at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue. Besides their Build Your Own Burger, Brunchbox serves up a menu full of burgers and sandwiches every day from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Lunch was provided by Little River Cafe, located in downtown Portland at 0315 Southwest Montgomery Street. Serving food made from fresh ingredients, Little River Cafe is open for breakfast and brunch daily from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Dinner was provided by Mississippi Pizza, located in North Portland at 3552 North Mississippi Avenue. Integrated into the local Portland music scene, Mississippi Pizza hosts concerts while serving pizza and drinks, open daily from 11 a.m. to 12 a.m. or later. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now or go online to kboo.fm/give.
Coming this Friday during KBOO's Spring Membership Drive, it's News and Public Affairs Day. From 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.,
KBOO will be highlighting the voices of our news and public affairs volunteers. This spring's News and Public Affairs Day will be featuring programs that take a critical look at data mining
and the non-great side of social media and how our lives are increasingly affected by the internet.
That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday, April 12th from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Portland State University Hatfield School of Government, offering a master's degree in public administration for those who want to create efficient and inclusive cities, government agencies, and nonprofits. More information online at pdx.edu/Hatfield School. And up next is a little pledge drive break.
All right, and we are back on our pledge drive. So my name is Guinevere, and I thought I'd tell you just a bit about myself. I'm a life coach. I live in Portland, and I became a member of KBOO, 2 years ago or so. And I walked in absolutely terrified of sitting down in front of a microphone and saying something. But I was invited on a show, and I said what I said, and I was hooked. It's an amazing thing. And so I've grown and expanded into the community here a little bit at a time. Now I have a show. It's called Is It You or Is It Me? You know, and all of that just happens so organically, and I get to support people that are in personal development type stuff, things like that, that I feel are important to bring to the community. So that's how it happens. You know, if you're wondering how it happens, that's how it happens. You get invited, you come on down, become a member, and you get involved, and you get to become part of this community. So part of this pledge drive is letting you know what's going on here, but it's also asking for your support. So give us a call, 877 500-5266. Any amount that you pledge is appreciated. If you can do $10 a month, that is awesome. If you can do a one-time donation, what is this, April? Not quite at the tax returns yet, but we're close. So there's always that. Shave off a little bit, send it to KBOO. 877-500-5266. You know, being involved in a community station like this is an amazing thing because there is so many different things going on that just are mind-blowing. You come in one day and something, you know, in the community is going on and it's on the news, we're talking about it, and then there's a show that comes on telling you stuff about, like, this homeless walk down to Salem from Portland. So there's all kinds of information here, and that is what you're supporting when you give us a call, 877-500-5266. You know, if you're sitting at home right now, it's been a day of work, and you're watching TV or having a sip of wine or chatting around, or maybe you're, you know, out having a little bite at the local bar or something, just pick up your phone, go to kboo.fm, hit the donate button, get a few other people that are sitting around to do it. Next thing you know, you're all talking about KBOO. For those people like to talk on the phone, 877-500-5266. Or what's really cool is there's now a KBOO app. You can go to your app store, download the app, off you go. There's a donate button right there. You get to, you know, play with an app. I actually haven't used the app. I'll have to do that so I can talk about it more. So financial support enables KBOO and the community here and our community at large to have a voice over the airwaves. This is such a big deal. I mean, people don't realize private radio came on. Radio came on as private stuff. Like, you had access to the airwaves. You had access to people's living rooms. Different shows, different voices coming to you. This was all done, you know, because we could create it. It, you know, somebody in the government didn't say, oh, let's give everybody radio stations. People started up radio stations because they wanted to. Now these airwaves are being zapped up by the corporations and all the bigger places, and you get corporate information. KBOO is community supported. This is your show. This is your airwaves, and your support helps keep it open. 877-500-5266. Give us a call. Thanks.
Yeah, 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 what's really going on? This is Boost from the Coup with Hard Knock Radio. You gotta be there.
What up, y'all? It's Aya Sage, a.k.a. Rocky Rivera, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop.
JVB Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Sitting in front of me is a gentleman by the name of Ken Hartman. He is featured in a documentary called Toe Tag Parole. And it's basically talking about a groundbreaking way in which those who are incarcerated, and in this case formerly incarcerated, are dealt with. It's in Yard A, I believe in San Quentin?
Lancaster
Prison. And we wanted to find out what the documentary is about and what this experimental, that's the word that they use, way of dealing with folks who are trying to be rehabilitated. So welcome to the show, Ken, and how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about this documentary, and let's talk about Yard A.
Yeah, so it originally started off as the Honor Program, and it began, fundamentally it began as an idea of how could we create a yard where guys could come onto the yard, we'd make an agreement, no racism, no violence, no gangs, you know, do away with all those super negative influences and try to live like human beings. And I wrote the original proposal that started it.
When was this?
I want to say I wrote the proposal in 1998, and the yard was actually implemented in the year 2000, and it was subsequently renamed the Progressive Programming Facility because the Department of Corrections didn't like the name Honor associated with prisoners.
What made them, those who were in charge of the prison, what made them take heed to your idea?
I think we were sort of, there was a fortuitous moment where the prison had had riot after riot after riot. It was completely dysfunctional. And at the time, there was a man who was the warden named Ernie Rowe, who was one of the last wardens in California that had never been a guard. He had came up through the educational system. So he was a little more progressive, a little more open to ideas. So I think they were sort of exhausted, and he was open to ideas. And when a lieutenant that he was close friends with, that I was a clerk for at that time, presented the proposal to him, I think he just said, God, this is something, let's try it.
You know, when we, you said 1998, right? And so, in my mind, that's around the time that we had Gray Davis, and you're segueing into, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I bring up Gray Davis because he was a Democrat coming at the heels of a Republican. And so, therefore, his tone towards those who were incarcerated, who oftentimes are disproportionately people of color, would have been a little bit more progressive and softer. And what I think caught everybody off guard was he tried to double down. If I remember correctly, when people were up for parole, he was like, nah, I think I'm going to deny it, right? If I remember that correctly. And I bring all this up because it seemed like the conversation before Gray Davis, but definitely with him, was that rehabilitation was something that had been gotten rid of. We were always led to believe that those who were incarcerated would be rehabilitated and then let back into society, having changed. So can you kind of walk us through this whole process of rehabilitation? And is what you're talking about a reintroduction to something that they got rid of?
Yeah, so when they say it's an experimental program, it was only experimental for the context of California at that time. It was actually an old idea where fundamentally it was positive reinforcement. So if you give people an opportunity to do the right thing and you reward them for doing the right thing, they do the right thing. Because as I often tell people since I've gotten out and I've gone around talking about this in a lot of places, people in prison are people. That's the fundamental thing, you know, and you're absolutely right. It is disproportionately people of color. It is disproportionately poor people. It's people who are not empowered in the society, and they have been demonized and dehumanized. And you're right. At that time, Gray Davis was, you know, that was the they'll parole in a pine box governor, mm-hmm. you know, who had been Jerry Brown's chief of staff. And we thought, well, he's a great liberal man. He's going to come in. He was not. He was like a lot of Democrats who talk liberal, but they're not liberal in the criminal justice system. And that's reality. So what we tried to do is create an environment where it was possible for human beings to live like human beings. And what that did was it created this explosion of programming. And at the time, they had fired all the teachers. They had gotten rid of all the vocational instructors. So we started teaching our own classes. We created our own vocation. We created our own, you know, learn Spanish, learn how to write legal briefs, learn how to, you know, learn how to write essays. I mean, we created a whole panoply of programs. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it became so good that then Senate Majority Leader Gloria Romero introduced a bill into the legislature that we co-wrote to make honor programs become mandatory by the law in every level 3 and level 4 in California. It passed both houses of the legislature by bipartisan majorities, led primarily by our families, our friends, us from inside. We mobilized thousands of people to do this. And the guy at the time was named James Tilton. He was the Secretary of Corrections. He went to Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is now governor at that point, and talked him into vetoing the bill because they promised that they would introduce these programs throughout the state. They didn't need a law to do it. They did not.
Wow, you're kidding. What did that do for people when he vetoed it, and what happened afterwards?
It was a body blow. It really was. And it I think it dashed a lot of people's hopes. However, the one thing you can say about guys in California prisons, particularly lifers, particularly those serving life without the possibility of parole, which I was at the time, you know, this is our life, and we fought for it, and we kept fighting for it, and we never gave in. They had put me in the hole 3 or 4 times just for advocating politically for the program. You know, yeah, I'm advocating for good stuff. Put that guy in the hole. He's causing us problems.
So when you were talking to other inmates, you're speaking to them about this program, wound up getting you put in the hole?
Pretty much, yeah. And it wasn't just that. I mean, one time they put me in the hole because I published an article that was in a newspaper that they claimed had confidential information in it. And of course, when they did the investigation, the confidential information was available on the Department of Corrections website. So, you know, I mean, they were just mad. They were mad because I was fighting against them, and I kept fighting against them my whole time.
I'm trying to understand, and maybe you can help our listeners understand. Nobody, in theory, likes anybody who is going to violate their property, violate them, et cetera, et cetera. And ultimately, ideally, we would want change behavior. You know, if you're a bad guy, we want you not to be that bad guy. But as you say, as we know, choices are made, situations arise, and we have a number of people who are down that road. Once you're there, the reality is you're probably going to get out. We're going to see Pookie and Ray Ray and Johnny and whoever sooner or later. And we would hope that they've improved, you know. I don't understand the adversarial position that the prison guards and others have taken over the years when you see these attempts being made. Having been involved with people and organizations on the outside, there seemed to always be a real adversarial type of situation. Obviously, from talking to people like yourself, we often hear this. What is going on with folks who put on that green jacket, that the idea of being caretakers of an institution that is supposed to keep the quote-unquote bad guys away from society until they change? Why aren't they helping with that change?
You know, it's a really good question. And I think fundamentally it breaks down to the two things. The first thing is, for a certain percentage of them, they want us to fail, because failure actually is success for them. Because, of course, if prisoners stopped coming back when they got out, the prisons would empty out, because a substantial percentage of the people in prison are parole violators at any one time. And it becomes about jobs and positions and taxpayer money. That's the worst.
Is that cynical for folks?
Yeah, it's that cynical for some people. I totally believe it is. Now, I would say for the majority, to be fair, because I don't believe that people who become prison guards are inherently evil. I don't believe that. I think for the majority, I think what happened is this idea that rehabilitation doesn't work, people are never going to change, it just became such a part of the culture that they just embraced it themselves. And when you unleash people in a position of authority and tell them you could do anything you want, be as tough as you want, they came up with this crazy idea that we're going to get tough on prisoners, we're going to treat them terrible, and somehow that's going to make them better people. They know now that it was a failure. They've admitted that it was a complete failure. You know, I tell people this all the time. I came to prison in 1980. The recidivism rate in 1980 was 24%. The recidivism rate at the worst of it in California was about 75%. And that was a direct result of treating people badly, treating people less than human. People, you treat people badly, they don't become good. That's just stupid. And I think some people knew that, but there was this strain of sort of, we're going to get tough, we're going to be hard. You know, George Dukmejian, Pete Wilson, you know, there's a whole school of criminology on this. They've all been shown to have been completely false, and it was a terrible, horrible experiment.
What do you think people are missing, or what do you think they should know about those who are incarcerated, the steps that people on the outside should be taking to move people in another direction, in a more uplifting, more productive direction?
Well, I think that's actually not a hard question to answer. So first and foremost, the vast majority of people in prison are in fact going to get out. More than 95% do get out. The majority of people in prison are very remorseful for what they did that put them in prison. They want to make amends. They want to do good. They want to be given opportunities to do good. And what can people on the outside do? People on the outside can pressure their elected officials and say, look, the path that you took for the last 25 years was a dismal failure. Let's do something different. Let's treat the people in prison like they are people. Let's treat them as if they're human beings and they are capable of becoming better than their worst moments. I personally believe every human being is capable of becoming better than their worst moment. There should be no death penalty. There should be no life without the possibility of parole. Every human being should be able to go in front of a parole board and demonstrate that they have changed and they're a better person now. And that's, I believe that's just fundamental. And every other country on earth, essentially, has learned this lesson.
Somebody listening to this has watched a news show, 48 Hours, Dateline. They watched an array of police shows. They've heard from an array of police and people in law enforcement who said the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. I've met so-and-so. He was not remorseful. They show you the Charles Mansons of the world, and they say, this is the prisoner. So now we know that you were able to speak your truth to our audience, but how do they cut through that sort of rhetoric, which is institutionalized? It's backed by Hollywood. It's backed by news stations. It's backed by all sorts of bells and whistles that we've been told we should trust. And at the very least, they socialize and shape our opinions.
Yeah, so... the first thing I would say to that is to whatever official, whatever police officer, whatever district attorney is making those comments, I would say, A, there's some really bad police officers and really bad district attorneys. That isn't all of them, you know, and you can always find examples. There are examples of some people who, you're right, they're not remorseful. There are people who aren't. I am not saying that every single person who goes to prison should in fact get out. I'm saying that every single person in prison is capable of change, and let's give them a chance to change, and let's let them go in front of a parole board. And if they've really changed, and the parole board is actually quite effective, the recidivism rate for people who go through the parole board is about 1%, and no violent crimes. So, you know, so I think, so it has become a kind of like, I think the term is a trope, you know, where like you just assume everybody in prison is horrible and evil. They're not, you know, they're actually not. I know that for a fact because I lived in prison for 38 continuous years. I've been out 15 months, and there are plenty of human beings in prison right now who should be out here, who would be helping the community, and they desperately want to do that.
Let's talk about the documentary. It's going to be showing tonight, Tuesday. Give the place at the Parkway, I believe it's going to be at. Yes. What are we going to see in this documentary? You know, what is it? It features you, obviously, but let's talk about some of the bells and whistles in that and why people should check it out.
So here's what's going on in this documentary. Number one, the documentary is really about life without the possibility of parole. Most everyone featured in the film is serving life without the possibility of parole. Now, those guys were serving time on what was then called the Progressive Programming Facility. So these are guys that are artists, they're training dogs, they're, you know, they're engaged in all kinds of positive actions that are there to do good, to try to be pay back to the communities from which they come. And you're going to get to hear and see a lot of people in their real experience and how things really are. And I think the best part of this documentary is that, again, it puts a human face on people are portrayed as if they have horns and tails and they're devils. You're going to see human beings who are deeply, incredibly remorseful for the actions that they did. And they're mostly in their youth, and they're mostly older guys now who have done their best to become better people through their actions.
How do people who've done bad things, horrific things, murder, rape, and what have you, how has that been reconciled with those who are victim to it? Somebody who lost a mom, a dad, a loved one, a child. You know, we just had our city council person lose her son, for example. How does that get reconciled? Because that seems to be the victims of those type of crimes are held up and said, on behalf of Miss Jones and Mr. Smith and so-and-so, this is why we put away these folks.
Well, again, there's a sort of it's a nuanced answer. Those things are presented in kind of a black and white, you know, it's an either-or thing. It's really yes and what I mean by that is, A, I have done a lot of victim reconciliation work in the time that I was in. I have met literally hundreds of members of families of people who have been murdered who are the exact opposite of the people that are held up. In fact, there have been some pretty good surveys done by pretty reputable organizations that show that the vast majority of crime victims want rehabilitation. They actually aren't they're not there. Don't tie the guy to the wall and throw rocks at him. Teach him how to be a better human being so something like this never happens again. And then use that guy's experience to try to keep other people from these things happening. So that's one aspect of this. The other aspect of it is this, and I will speak, I'm only speaking for Ken Hartman right now. When I was 19 years old, I killed a man named Thomas Allen Fellows in a drunken fistfight. I was wrong. It was a terrible thing to do. I will be remorseful for that action for the rest of my life. And I will do what many, many other men and women who are serving life terms in prison will do, which is I will spend the rest of my life trying to be as good a human being as I can be to remember Thomas Allen Fellows and be better than that worst moment of my life.
Ken, one of the things that we've been talking about a lot in society is mental health. We hear the words like trauma, you know, triggers, all these types of things. Those who you serve time with, how much of in need are they of that sort of service so that they're not traumatized if that is one thing that they're dealing with? If they do have certain mental challenges, how is that addressed?
Well, poorly, to keep it to be real about it. But I will say, you know, people aren't born bad. They're really not. Human beings are human beings. I never met a single person in prison who was in there for a crime that they committed that hadn't had a pretty horrible life prior to that happening. That doesn't excuse the crime. That isn't an excuse for it. But it does explain how people can end up in a situation where they're capable of doing those kinds of things. The prison system does a very poor job of this because, A, the being in prison is in and of itself a traumatic experience. Very traumatic experience, and B, there's just so little emphasis placed on providing real, competent, high-quality mental health care to people in prison because fundamentally the California prison system, sadly, is a giant mental hospital. I mean, it really is. This is a nationwide problem.
Real talk. The school-to-prison pipeline is another thing we hear. How aware of that are you guys who were incarcerated, now that you've been out and you've been speaking, how aware of that are you, and what do we need to do, in your opinion, to really curtail that?
Well, so I grew up in North Long Beach, which is sort of at the bottom end of South Central, and my family were basically pretty poor. You know, I grew up in an area that was pretty rough, and they had pretty crappy schools. And I wasn't even in the worst part of Los Angeles, and there are places where it's way worse. So I think, in my personal opinion, the fact that the local schools are funded by local property taxes is a way of saying rich people will always get a better education and poor people always get a crappier one. I mean, I think there are some really fundamental structural issues that need to change. Every student in California should be receiving the same level of funding and care as every other student. It should not matter whether you made the good choice of having rich parents or not.
Real talk right there. Tell everybody the time that the movie documentary will be showing, and let everybody know at the New Parkway Theater, like on I want to say 24th, but you all know it's right off of downtown Oakland, you know, near the Impact Hub. So it's 24th off of Telegraph, I believe. And what time is it going to start?
I believe it starts at 6:30 p.m.
And you're going to be doing a Q&A afterwards.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a Q&A, and my daughter, who is now 23 years old, from a family visit before they took family visits away from lifers, who lives in San Francisco, she will also be there along with me to do it. And Keith Watley from Uncommon Law will be there. And this is a fundraiser for Uncommon Law, which represents indigent prisoners going to their board hearings. It's a wonderful nonprofit organization.
The whole thing with family visits, some parts of the world, that is an essential part of keeping people human. You see your family, and maybe you made the bad choice, but your little kid who's 6, 7, 8, 10, or 11 didn't. Mm-hmm. How are we reconciling that? Are we still keeping the families apart? You know, where does that stand at this point? And did they, and at this experimental progressive prison, Yard A, as they were saying, did they reinstate that at all?
To update things, I will give the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation a little credit. They have reinstated conjugal visits, family visits for most prisoners. Not all. There's still limitations on people for a variety of reasons. But most people inside now are able to get family visits again. We tried to get family visits reinstated for the Progressive Program Facility, the Honor Program. They never would do it, so they didn't. And it is, in fact, it should be an essential part of the idea of, you know, when you go to prison in Norway, the first thing they tell you in Norway is they hand you a cell phone and say, stay in touch with your family. You know, in California, it's like a crime to have a cell phone to stay in touch with your family. And I think that really sort of like speaks volumes as to the different opinion and attitudes and approaches they're taking to crime. And in Norway, they have a recidivism rate that's like less than a quarter of ours.
So there you have it. A lot to take in, a lot to think about. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio tonight. They'll be showing the documentary, Tag Toe Parole. Go check it out at the Parkway Theater. It's going to kick off at 6:30. Afterwards, there will be a Q&A. Hard Knock Radio, we'll be right back. Let us ha, hey, hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from the hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, repping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, repping to the hard side.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we'll hear Erica Huggins, former leading Black Panther member, as well as an educator and activist. She spoke at the 2019 Black Girls March in Oakland. Stay tuned.
How are you feeling? You should feel amazing because you are amazing. There is no question about that. So, thank you to everyone who put this together, and thank you particularly to Luna and the Conju Girls. Thank you for Carol, who is the adult kind of organizer for this. Thank you to all of you for being here on a bright, beautiful Saturday morning instead of sleeping in, hanging out, or whatever, because our lives are so important. So what is the medicine? We talk about magic. What is the medicine in magic? What is it that allows us over the generations to survive, and more than that, to thrive? The medicine in magic is the ability to stand up, to make the effort one more time, to bounce back under scrutiny and under surveillance and under the eyes of violence. The medicine and magic is faith in those who came before us and in ourselves, no matter how young we are. Medicine and magic is humor. And it is also our ability to help one another to heal. It is important that we help one another to heal. There is so much work we have to do in our communities to heal. So the magic is at the core of itself is effort. The effort to listen and understand and to have compassion, even in the face of what seems like unmagic. If you can focus your attention on your breath right now, just take a deep breath in and breathe out. Take another deep breath in and breathe out. And send your well wishes to everyone who needs your love and your healing prayers. If everybody would just come this way and allow for things to unfold as they will. My name is Erica, and I made a vow to serve people for the rest of my life when I was 15. And I've continued to honor that vow, and I'm now not 15. So I want to say that your efforts, Kanju girls, your efforts, people who are in the circle today, your efforts are important, each of you. None of us will thrive in these times we live in the world as it is without making effort. There is no one else. As June Jordan says, we are the ones we are waiting for. We are the ones we're waiting for. So we are black, and that means we are of African descent. We are women, and you, I'm speaking now to young women, are not only young, but you're brilliant, you're lovable, you're beautiful, and I want to say that you are immensely good. Not just good, immensely good from the inside out. You don't have to do anything to be good. You just are. And you're also perfect. And you don't have to wear or change anything about yourself in order to be perfect. You were born perfect. I don't care what society says about how you should be or look, about your color, your texture, the shape of your eyes, the shape of your body. You are absolutely perfect as you are. We are non-binary. We are queer. Some of us are disabled in ways we cannot see. And we are often working and working poor. We're survivors of multiple physical, emotional, and psychic assault. We are the healers because we are attempting to heal. We are the healers because we are attempting to heal. There is magic in making effort to heal, to stand up, to step out for ourselves and for others. It is magic that we're able to live and support one another. Turn to the person next to you and say something kind. Right now, don't wait. You don't have to know somebody to be kind. This is magic. Magic is not a la-la thing. It is the effort we put forth and continue to put forth, even if for many generations, since American chattel slavery, systemic racism and sexism still exist and are rampant, hopefully outside of our hearts. So check your heart. Are there vestiges of racism in your own heart? Are there vestiges of sexism in your own heart? That's where it all begins. And I'm assuming that the answer is no, or maybe a little bit. But I want to say that we, black women and girls, are the scholars of the intersectional body. We talk that talk about intersectionality. However, we're the scholars because we live in intersectional bodies. Think about it. Our bodies are black or brown or whatever shade we want to name, and we are women. And we also have other coinciding identities. So don't let a scholar in a book tell you what it is. Tell yourself what it is. You represent so many identities, and that means you can help others to heal when they're at odds with a part of themselves. It is magic that we're determined to remember black girls, not only in Oakland and throughout the United States, but throughout the diaspora who suffer abuse. Like the little girls in Nigeria who can't go to school because they're girls. Or the girls who are trafficked and are sex slaves. Or the mothers who are forced to have children they cannot raise. It goes on and on. It's here and it's there. And it is up to us to think globally about the design of our lives. This is what my grandmother taught me. This is what my mother taught me. This is what I taught my daughters. This is what I hope for you, that you recognize that you are loved and lovable, that you are brilliant beyond measure, and there is nothing that we can't do together, even if naysayers say that's not true. We are not imagined strong black women. That is a re-stereotyping that has lived decade after decade. No, we carry light and magic in our DNA. That's where it is. It's in our DNA, and that is power. We are powerful, and all power to black girls. I'd like us now to take a moment of silence. Even though there is noise around our circle, we are in it and we can be silent. And this silence is for the ones who've been beaten and stabbed and raped, who've been killed, who've been used, the ones who are lost and don't want to be found, the ones who've been found and struggle every day not to get lost again. The ones who would be here if they could, but they're incarcerated. And we know that there are all kinds of carceral sites. So take a moment now in silence. It doesn't matter what somebody else is doing. This is something that you are doing. And we can conclude that moment of silence with prayers for the girls yet unborn, for the ones that will be born soon, for the generations to come as well as the generations now. So I'll end by asking you to do one more thing. Let's celebrate and call out the names of those unsung heroes. You know, the ones who don't have a name that gets in the news or in a book or gets invited to a stage like this one. Call out those names of girls and women. Just call them out right now. Keep calling them out. Don't be shy. Those names are important. Cosette Jenkins, Lula Davis, come on, call out some more. The men can call out these names too, it's fine. It is important that we hold the women of our lives in high priority. So now call out your own name. And if you're shy and you can't call out your own name, that's okay. But you are the leader of today and tomorrow. So call that into the universe so that it can be affirmed.
Jaden Kathleen, Mary Teresa,
Lauren Campbell,
Erica Huggins. That feels good, right? So if we affirm ourselves and make it a habit, a good habit, if we make the effort to call out the name of our own self and to remember others when we wake up in the morning and there's one more ridiculousness to meet, we will be, instead of sprinters, we will be long distance runners. That's what you want to be. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you steal something I said and run with it. Remember that love is a great power. Use it to transform your world. Thank you. Thank you so much, Miss Erica Hudson, for those beautiful words. Next up, we have Lauren. She's the co-leader of the Black Girls Union at MetWest High School, and she has some words for us today. Hey! Let's all take a breath. Okay, I have a poem to read. It's called I Am You and You Are Me. I am your knocker balls, barrettes, and pink lotion. I am your finger waves, afros, box braids, and bantu knots. I am your Hershey chocolate, your brown sugar baby, your honey bun, and your peach. I am your 1-inch long acrylics and your 30-inch long weaves. I am your shea butter, your coconut oil, and your 8 hours in the shop on this Saturday morning. I am your Fenty Beauty. I'm your Sunday dinner and your 4th of July cookout. I'm your Erica Badu and your City Girls. I am you and you are me. We are beautiful, we are talented, we are Black, and we are women. Okay. Now I want you to turn to a Black girl and say, I am you and you are me. Say it again. Okay, okay.
thank you so much, Lauren. I believe that closes out our speakers for today. So we will start marching very soon. Thank you so much. Oh, wait. No, psych. ¿Qué? ¿Qué se dice?
Morning, afternoon. My name is Lonnie. I'm from the Hebrew Culture Community. Myself say shalom to all you ladies and to Black Girls March. Myself just want to say, speak briefly, that mothers are the givers of life. They're the nourishers of life. They bring forth life. They create life. Same with the young ladies. As they go through life, they go through stages in life. And these are one of the stages. It's the rites of passage. It's not the R-I-G-H-T. It's the R-I-T-E. It is a right for these young women to stand and to do what they're doing, because they are women growing to be young women growing to be women. A mother carries a child inside her womb for 9 months, 10 months, and then she brings forth that child. She nourishes that child. She's the giver of life. She's the breath of life. But all her life, she's fighting. She's always fighting for some kind of right, some kind of right that's already hers. How can you give the breath of life secondary? How can you give the one that gives life nothing? The one that gives life, you put her in the background that she's not be seen. The only time she be seen is when a man speaks or a man announces her. This earth is called Mother Earth. It brings forth life. It gives life to us. Every woman that you see, every child you see, they are the givers of life. What more right that they should have, that they should be equal to everyone? Not just fighting for rights, speaking about rights, or having a protest, or go around and have rallies like this. Women all over the world are put down. Men want to see them standing on corners, showing different parts of their bodies. That's the only thing make them happy. The word in the Bible say, be not conformed to the things of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that's what these young girls are doing. A situation happened where someone approached a young lady and threatened her with violence. She took action, and this is a part of her action, to stand against all violence. And that's what we need to do, not just people of black or anything, but people of all colors. We need to come together in humanity. We all need to be highly human and stand together regardless of whatever it is or whoever it is. If it's violence against anyone, man, woman, or child, we need to learn to stand together. Don't wait till the violence comes to your door or your family. It's all families. All families, one nation. We talk about one nation under God, one nation under Allah, whoever you worship. It doesn't matter. What matters is we come together as one people for the same purpose, for the same goal, to end violence, to stop the death, to stop the raping of our children, mentally and physically. So myself say shalom, peace and blessing to all the mothers. Myself am a Hebrew of a mother, soul, self, fundamental principle. That is our doctrine, that is a part of our format. And I'll explain that. Mother, soul, self, fundamental principle means mother. Soul, self means your DNA. Fundamental principle means the basic things you teach your children. Only means the best. So when you hear the word mother, soul, self, fundamental principle, know that every woman, child out there, you are the best. You are the key. You are the source. Every woman that has a child, that child is snipped away from the mother, not the father. Taking nothing from the father, because he is the envelope that wraps that child within inside that mother. His seed becomes the protector of that child inside. I got you. So myself just want to say shalom, have a worthy day, enjoy the rally.
Hard Knock Radio, rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Moving toward justice. We are rising. For the first time in years, our forces are building again, cohering again, marching again. In California, an all-star roster of activists, writers, and revolutionaries are coming together, marking a new period, a time of freedom. We're not saying nor suggesting that the movement has been quiescent. No, for it hasn't been. It has fought the good fight for life and health that has had national impact in prison systems literally across the country. I'm speaking here of the state's attempt to deny treatment for hepatitis C, an affliction that touches the lives of at least some 700,000 men and women in America's crowded prisons. Our people filled courtrooms and hit the streets to demand change and antiviral treatment for Hep C sufferers like me. They demanded change and made change that continues to radiate across America. A black doctor, an internist from New York, Dr. Joseph Harris, took the stand and taught the world about Hep C. This passionate, informed analysis of Hep C demolished the DOC's obstruction to treatment and opened the door to new precedents for Hep C sufferers. With the help of our lawyers, Brett Grote and Robert Boyle, established a new legal precedent that has helped thousands of imprisoned Hep C sufferers all across America live longer and healthier lives. Your support made it possible. Now, in California, we are continuing the march towards freedom. For soon, you will hear from some friends of our movement on the steps to come. People like Angela Davis, who herself years ago faced multiple death penalty charges until she was freed. Groundbreaking, she is an abolitionist and an anti-incarceration scholar and founder of Critical Resistance, a group that continues to fight against the prison industrial complex. Alice Walker, a literary lion and womanist, feminist activist and icon. Judith Ritter, Widener University Law School professor and author of several law review articles on criminal justice. Pam Africa, MOVE's Minister of Confrontation and founder of the international concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Jeff Mackler, editor of Socialist Action newspaper and radical activist who has worked lifelong on behalf of people's movements and struggles. From anti-imperial war and to the historic Lynn Stewart fight for freedom to our own. Professor Eula Taylor, African American Studies professor at UC Santa Barbara, who has taught prisoners at Lompoc. And Stephen Bingham. Remember the young dude who the cops said smuggled a weapon into George Jackson when he was in Soledad? That's the dude. He spent 13 years in France before he came back, went to trial, and was acquitted. Attorney, recently retired, Stephen Bingham. Voices of resistance, of rebellion, of new life, and of freedom. We are rising. The scent of freedom is in the air. This is our time to mobilize, to build, to create social change. This is the time, and we are that change. Won't you join us? From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out Anita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah.
Stand up.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. It's our membership drive. It's time to dial 877-500-5266. That's right. Call now and support your community radio station, 877-500-5266. Or you can go to kboo.fm right now.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunchbox, located in downtown Portland at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue. Besides their Build Your Own Burger, Brunchbox serves up a menu full of burgers and sandwiches every day from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Lunch was provided by Little River Cafe, located in downtown Portland at 0315 Southwest Montgomery Street. Serving food made from fresh ingredients, Little River Cafe is open for breakfast and brunch daily from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Dinner was provided by Mississippi Pizza, located in North Portland at 3552 North Mississippi Avenue. Integrated into the local Portland music scene, Mississippi Pizza hosts concerts while serving pizza and drinks, open daily from 11 a.m. to 12 a.m. or later. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now or go online to kboo.fm/give.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, April 15th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen The 40-Year-Old Virgin, starring Steve Carell, Catherine Keener, and more in this romantic comedy. Again, that's The 40-Year-Old Virgin showing Monday, April 15th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland.